Hello and welcome to All Villa No Filler, a podcast all about Aston Villa, the world's greatest football team. Villa were in cruise control against Brentford until the game went insane and ended in a frustrating 3-3 draw. More on that in a sec. And if today's game wasn't dramatic enough, we've got one of Frankie's spicy questions served up for later in the show. First things first, Frankie, how are you?
Oh, it is quite a spicy one, George. I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, could get us a booed out of the whole tent or something like that, I think. But yeah, I'm sort of in recovery, really, from what we witnessed today. It was action-packed, wasn't it?
It was.
Just mad.
It was. I think, and I hate to say it, Frankie, it reminded me a little bit of Aston Villa versus Stoke City.
Yeah, it had that vibe, didn't it?
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. To our younger listeners who may not be aware of that particular game, that was when Martin O'Neill was in charge and things were free and easy at Villa Park at the time. I think we were fourth in the table. And we were 2-0 up against Stoke City in about 2008, was it maybe?
Yeah, 8-9.
Yeah.
Jonathan Pearce famously said when we went 2-0 up, he was like, Aston Villa will be playing Champions League football next season.
That's right, yes. Yeah. I think it was around this time of year again. It was certainly in March time, wasn't it? And yeah. John Carew scored an amazing goal. That goal is often talked about, but the result of the game isn't. And then Stoke came back in the last couple of minutes to draw the game 2-2. And that sort of started the capitulation of Aston Villa Football Club, particularly that season. And you could say, consequently, for the next sort of 10 years to come. But we're not going to go there, Frankie. We're not going to go there. This is a different team, different manager. Let's talk about the game itself. How are we feeling when, you know, we went 2-0 up and all seemed right and well with the world?
Well, I mean, Brentford came into the game very, very defensive. They play with that back five. They always play a back five and they have three in midfield and then the two strikers came back. So in the middle, it was very compact and the back five was very difficult to break through. And I think at first, we found it difficult to play through them, which is just always going to be the case when the team plays like that. And I think there were one or two occasions where they were actually quite dangerous on the break. And I thought Sergi Reguilon should have been released a couple of times by Mbeumo. And if he had been, I think they could have caused us more problems in the first half than they did. But fortunately, we managed to get away one or two hairy moments. But largely, we were absolutely dominant. And one of the key tricks of Brentford, as I noted in a YouTube video I did all the way back in December, was something I watched with Brentford was how teams had started with their inverted wingers. So if you have a left footer playing on the right or right footer playing on the left, what they do is they cut in and then on their strong foot, they whip a ball in out to in into the area. And Brentford tend to just concede goals that way. And they did it. We did it against them in December. And we did it again today with John McGinn finally putting in an absolutely fantastic ball to Ollie Watkins, who, you know, really good header. And, you know, I don't really know why Brentford are we like that. They're a very, very strong physical side. So, a bit weird. But, yeah, so it was great to sort of break that down early on. You know, like we couldn't do that against Sheffield United back in December. And we, you know, that sort of these low blocks, which shows that we can break them down. But the problem was second half, you know, we took we came firing out the blocks really good, which is something we've not been doing after halftime recently. And a fantastic goal from Morgan Rogers. I actually called it. I said it in the London Lions WhatsApp group. I said that Morgan Rogers is going to get his first goal today. Wish I put a bet on it. Just because I think his performances against Wolves and Manchester City were both so encouraging. I think he's very rapidly adapting to the Premier League and showing exactly what it is Monchi, Emery and all the scouting department saw. And I thought it was an absolutely fantastic goal. And if that's what he's capable of already, you know, he's then who knows what he can become. And the lots of attributes to his game were really good. His tackling was good today as well. His physical, you know, he's a tall guy, he's big, strong. There's a lot there. And I think in a year's time, I can't wait to see where he is, really. But then, my goodness, George, it was like, to me, this game was like the movie Benjamin Button, you know? When we went 2-0 up, I thought like I was de-aging. I was so relaxed. The players, they might as well just got deck chairs out, put them along the sidelines. You know, Douglas Luiz gets a little guitar out, starts strumming, starts singing, starts dancing for everybody. And but it was like we all had the pina coladas out. And then bloody hell, I just like the Benjamin Button film, I regained all that age when in that 10-minute spell that just went absolutely crazy. Could you believe what was happening?
No. Yeah, I feel like I know exactly what you mean. I regained all that age and then some.
Yeah. I'm now
But
like 78 years old, I think.
yeah, but I mean, just like that game against Stoke that we were talking about earlier, it's like, you know, two going 2-0 up, you're coasting, you're drinking your pina coladas. It's a dangerous scoreline because you think, okay, we're at home, we're 2-0 up, we're against a Brentford side battling relegation. We can take our foot off the gas. That's exactly how it felt. And you know, Brentford's goal came after a brief period of pressure from them, but nothing that made me think, okay, we can't manage it. I mean, it was the most bizarre goal as well, because you know, the ball comes in, I think it was Damsgaard, plays it back into the box, and it hits the standing leg of Jorgensen
Yeah,
and goes in.
that's mad.
And
Even his own face was like,
yeah, he was like, I don't know how that one went in.
"Nah."
But
I think if ever you played a Premier League game ever, and you ever like accidentally scored a goal, that is what would happen. It'd be some bumbling incident like that. You'd be like,
yeah,
"How about
but
that just happened? How did I just score a Premier League goal?"
yeah, that yeah, it might a Premier League goal would look like that, but my celebration would be like the
Yeah. Oh,
Ronaldo.
I'd be up into row Z of the whole end, throwing my shirt around. I'd be,
Yeah,
I, just, I
like
wouldn't be able to contain
the
myself.
style of goal to the style of celebration would be quite disparate. But
Yeah, even if we were 7-1 down, I'd still be like
yeah,
going absolutely mental. The stadium's emptied out. Everyone's gone home already.
yeah, definitely. But yeah, so that gets them back into it, and I'm watching it thinking, okay, all right, well, you know, that's fine. We could just sort of like just regroup and manage it. Definitely not. We just lose all sense of focus and control. It all goes out the window. The passes become sloppier. Before you know it, it's 2-2. And then a couple of minutes later, it's 3-2 Brentford. And after, you know, 9 minutes, you're thinking, crikey, it's like you've been hit by a bus. It just
Yeah.
it sort of happens all of a sudden. Before you know it, you're scrambling around to try and get something from the game. And you know, to be fair, the team did regroup, and we
Yeah.
put Brentford under a lot of pressure, and we got the equaliser that we deserved, and you know, we could have got something from the game in the end. But you know, we made a rod for own back in that mad 10-minute spell. We blew it, and you know, to put yeah, to make things even worse, with almost the last moment of the
Yeah.
game, Dougie Louise picks up a yellow card, which means he's banned for the next two games. I just
God, yeah.
think, you know,
Just.
what a sacrifice we've made there.
Yeah.
And we've got Arsenal next, and you know, it's just, yeah, you come away thinking, you know, we might look back on this game and think, actually, is it a point that we sort of gained weirdly because we went 3-2 down? But you know, at this stage, yeah, it does certainly feel like a defeat.
I think the fact we fought back is again reflective of the fact this team are so resilient. When we have knockbacks this season, we've had a really good tendency to come back from it, which is why I think, you know, comparisons to the Stoke game, I think we all have PTSD from that, from what happened then. And I don't think it's a repeat of that, in just in the sense I think this team will still get big victories this season. I still think there's you know, I don't think we're going to cave in like we did before. But, you know, this team's had so many injuries. We've had various setbacks this season, but we always seem to fight back. You know, so yeah, so to fight back it within the game itself with Ollie Watkins's goal, 18 Premier League goals this season is absolutely phenomenal work. And it was brilliant, and we really should have won it at the end. You know, McGinn with a ball into the area. Konsa really should have scored that header and came back out to Luka Dean, and then it was a difficult finish who hit it over. But I would say, so with this kind of mad spell, I've got various theories in my head as to what's going on, but one of the big reasons has to be the lack of a CDM. We don't have an out-and-out CDM,
No.
and Boubacar Kamara being away is a big miss. And you know, it's probably not a coincidence that since then we've had, you know, we were 3-0 up against Forest, went to 3-2, won it. Luton 2-0 up, went to 2-2. You know, they fought back and then we got a late winner. Wolves, even we were 1-0 up, I think. And then just after half time, between that 45-minute and 60-minute mark, when we seem to be conceding goals all the time, and not really looking too energized. Wolves had chances again. And it's kind of like there's a sort of lack of control in these moments, that's sort of undoing a lot of the amazing work we're doing within the first kind of 45 minutes at least. And it you know, I think, yeah, as I say, Boubacar Kamara being missing is a big loss. But also I think it has to be a little bit like, you know, game intelligence. Like today, the Brentford game, the goal, the first one, they basically let Reguilon off the leash then, right? You know, he and I think that Konsa needed support to deal with him. I think maybe Bailey should have trapped back or one of the midfielders come over to help out when they saw that this was becoming a bit of an issue. So the first goal, when he puts it in, there's like four Brentford players at the back post and two Villa players. And it's like, what? It's again, it's like the midfield just sort of, it's almost like it's gone from so in control that it's got become casual. And therefore the game management is not right. And then, you know, okay, you can see that. You think, all right, God, that's going to get us, you know, fired up again. We can't let that happen again. And then immediately, you know, again, Reguilon gets the ball, whips it in. And Pau Torres, I don't know what he's doing with his positioning. And Boomer with a great finish, but I'm not sure what Torres is doing there. And then the third goal, again, it comes to Reguilon across and Torres just leaves him. You know, yeah. Diego Carlos is well positioned. I have no idea what Torres is doing there. Again, it's just a little bit like there's a lack of kind of, you know, there's only so much your coach can do on the pitch as well. Sometimes you have to have players who react within game, have the game intelligence to know that something's changing. And sometimes maybe you need a Tyrone Mings there to just scream at everybody. You need a Roy Keane character sometimes to just bollock everyone because the concentration levels have dropped. And I think that was what, you know, I think there probably is something to it. You know, I think it was the same in Nottingham Forest. I think we went over into casual from being in control. And I thought, you know, and to be honest, I did think with Emery, I thought he should have changed it quicker. I thought he should have put McGinn into centre midfield when we were getting overrun by in the middle and put Yuri Tielemans a little bit further forward, just because McGinn's a bit more hustle bustle. And it just felt like Brentford for 10 minutes were harder, faster, stronger. And we did not react to that. Then picking up the pace and going more attacking when we should have done. And then I think maybe we should have had a substitution just to change the personnel and get, you know, more, I don't know, just somebody to come on with a fresh pair of legs, maybe do something a little bit different. It just felt like the game management from the players and even Professor and I himself wasn't quite right in that spell. And it's definitely something that I wonder whether we might work on this on the summer, similar to what Arsenal did last season when they figured they conceded too many goals to really get to the very highest. I wonder if that's something, given the amount of goals we are leaking now, whether we target a CDM, because who knows how long Kamara's out for, and whether we maybe reevaluate how we defend our leads. We don't do a West Ham and become passive. You know, we 1-0 up and then suddenly just sit back with 11 behind the ball. But more kind of like what Arsenal did against Brighton today. They were 2-0 ahead. And the way they were structured defensively, it was like they were defending for their lives. And it was so intelligent how they were, you know, they're basically at times 4 at the back, then it was 6. Then Rice was there marshalling. And then on the break, they get a goal. And it's that sort of game management that I think, you know, we've had a fantastic season. We're in a brilliant place given where, you know, Emery only took over a year and a half ago. We're in an absolutely fantastic place and we've done brilliantly, particularly with the injuries and everything we've had so far this season. But yeah, there's going to be adaptation needed. And I do wonder whether we might need to adjust and think how we defend these leads going forward.
Yeah. And I think, to be honest, we have to take into account, as you say, Frankie, like the injuries and the suspensions, obviously now that we're being afflicted by. I'm not saying, you know, we're the only club in that position. There's lots of teams in the Premier League that are suffering. It's a challenge, isn't it? Trying to kind of manage the expectation of the crowd now, the expectation of the fans, because we are so far clear of United in our current position. But you know, we all know football, Frankie, and we know that dramatic things could happen and United could go on a mad run. Who knows? But anyway, yeah, to feel that sort of pressure and manage it despite having so many players out and now, you know, see Douglas Luiz now out for suspension. So it's great to have McGinn back, obviously, but it's like one in, one out, and it's so frustrating. And, you know, today felt like one of those games, looking at our fixtures, as all Villa fans now are probably doing, religiously checking the games to come. And you think, you know, this was one I think we all had written down on the fixture list as a three-pointer. Yeah. And so it is 2 points lost. We've got some tricky games coming up. Yeah. And yeah, you just hope that that we refocus now. You know, it's going to be hard now looking at the Arsenal game and thinking that's a we write that off. I don't think we can afford to do that. I think we need to just try and focus on getting what we can from that game.
I mean, they're in a difficult spot, Arsenal, because they've got the Champions League as well, and whether they're going to rotate players or not.
Or you know, we've got obviously Lille before Arsenal, yeah, exactly. Don't we?
Oh, so, God, yeah.
So that's on Thursday.
Oh God.
So
yeah.
So, but I mean, this is, you know, we say, oh God, but this is what we want. This is, the, yeah. You know, we're in the quarterfinals of a European competition and
and
fighting for Champions League. I mean, this is,
yeah,
this is what we want, but it's hard to manage. Obviously, this is a hard thing to balance, get right.
Yeah. I mean, I think the fact is, I think we're coming up against Arsenal probably at the absolute peak of their powers this season. They've looked brilliant recently from what I've watched them. I was so impressed today against Brighton. Look, it's going to be very difficult away there, but like I say, I'm not doom and gloom at all. I still think we have games going ahead this season. You know, Bournemouth at home, Chelsea at home, we've got Liverpool at home, second to last game. There's a lot of pressure on them to get a result. Crystal Palace away, Brighton away. These are games I still think we can get wins in. So we can still get fourth place, and you know, it, at minimum fifth, hopefully. You know, if Manchester United go on a tear, well, then that's just the nature of where we are in the league, and this is part of our adaptation. And this is, you know, we have to drop the loser mentality we've had, you know, or the kind of mentality, self-defeatist mentality we've had for a long time, and aim to be a club that, you know, gets the biggest prizes or goes for the biggest prizes and believes it can win the biggest prizes.
All Villa, No Filler on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Welcome back, everybody. Now it's time for this.
It's WrestleMania weekend, but forget The Rock fighting Cody Rhodes. This is the real battle you want to see between George and I as I ask this, the spicy question. Today, George... Oh my goodness, this is as spicy as Nando's gets. With the emergence of Morgan Rogers, is Jacob Ramsey now a player Villa could sell?
Oh.
We're the scouting department, George. Me and you, with it. You're the director of football. I'm the assistant to the director of football. I'm Gareth Keenan to your David Brent.
It's one of those heart and head situations, isn't it? You know, my heart says he's, you know, Aston Villa born and bred. He's a quality player, and we should be fighting tooth and nail to keep him. But my head says FFP, and it also says, you know, we sold Jack Grealish and improved. So I think. If the Frankie, money talks, and I hate to say it, but if we received a substantial bid for him, I certainly would consider it. You know, as you say, Morgan Rogers has come in and done very well. He didn't cost us too much money, although it felt like an ongoing transfer saga that took forever to get over the line. In relative terms, I don't think the transfer was too high. I think he's already more than starting to justify how much he cost. And you know, we're fourth on the table, having spent the vast majority of the season without Jacob Ramsey in the side. Mm-hmm. So you know, we've already sort of managed to get by without him. And if you're listening, Jacob, I'm sorry, buddy. But you know, and you've and he's got so much. I'm talking to him now. You've got
tears rolling down your cheeks. What's that scene you've in from that Wesley Snipes tear scene? It's that film New Jack City, is it? That scene.
Yeah, well, he's got the handgun and like the trilby hat. Yeah,
that's what you look like right now.
Yeah. Hate to do it, buddy, but I just think. We've been talking about our financial situation all year, really, haven't we, Frank? We're talking about the need and necessity to try to generate income where we can. And we talk about sellable assets and all the rest of it. And you look at someone like Jacob Ramsey, you look at his profile, his age, And you think, yeah, I mean, if a club did come in for him, you would certainly consider it. And ultimately, I trust Emery and Monchi with everything. You know, if they made the decision to sell him, then I would agree with it. In the same way that if they made a decision to sign a player who I didn't necessarily think, in my own personal view, was good enough, I would back it 100% because I back Emery 100%. So whatever decision they choose to make, with incomings or outgoings, I would accept. And Ramsey would be one of those players. And as I said, going back to the Grealish situation, you know, if we can go through the trauma of selling Jack Grealish and it work out the way it has done, then Jacob Ramsey doesn't really kind of compare to that, because you know, Grealish was the main man, wasn't he? He controlled literally everything in that team. So to losing him felt like a big deal. But
he was Alisson El Gaib.
He was Alisson El Gaib, Paul Atreides. But Ramsey is a very, very good player, but he's not as integral to the side, clearly, as Jack Grealish was. So I would say begrudgingly, I would potentially accept bids.
I think that's a very fair assessment, George. A very reasoned headed one. Hence, you know, I am assistant to your regional manager. I accept your decision. I think it's a real shame that FFP is designed in such a way that it encourages teams to sell youth products. I think part of what we all love about football is seeing youth players come through and, you know, seeing them advance and become top winning talents. The fact of the matter is that Jacob Ramsey probably is quite an appealing sellable asset, which is awful thing to just think about. But, you know, and I don't like the thought of him going somewhere like Newcastle or Tottenham or somewhere like that. I think it's such a shame what's happened to Ramsey this season. You know, he was in such good form last season when Emery came in. He looked absolutely brilliant. And I thought it was just like, you know, if he'd not gotten injured, his trajectory would have been, who knows where he'd be right now. You know, I think like the England tour would have been happening, somebody they would have considered. For England, of course, there's lots of competition in those positions, so I'm not sure he'd have been able to force his way in. But he's, you know, he was looking really good, and he was really key as well in the under 21s for England, and then that injury happened. And it's just, I don't know whether, you know, where did he come back too early from injury, and maybe it's just the type of injury that's really difficult to assess. It's a shame. It's a real shame. And but yeah, I think, yeah, Morgan Rogers, he does look like he fits in that role very naturally. Quite similar to Ramsey, maybe a little bit more skillful, I think. Yeah. Not yet the sort of same kind of, you know, Ramsey really, on the half turn when he blasts at a team, like there's very few players in the Premier League who have that level of kind of can, you know, throw a defence off. The thing with Rodgers as well, like I wonder if he could actually become a second striker. Just that goal he got today was in the kind of position that a second striker would be in, and it was a brilliant, brilliant finish. So that could be a role he adapts to and maybe becomes a bit of a Gibbs White. I've sort of been, you know, just some of the things he does, it does slightly remind me of it. So, yeah, I'm sort of really bigging up Morgan Rogers at the moment, but just what I've seen in recent games, I'm really, really excited by what he could do if he keeps improving. But yeah, with Ramsey, look, I mean, Villa this summer, I imagine, you know, if you look at, you know, our accounts or, you know, we've been seeing reports online from, you know, people like Kieran Maguire, great surname, about Villa's finances. And so, yeah, selling is, it's just part and parcel of football, isn't it? And at some point we probably are going to have to sell some of these big names that we love at the moment here. It's what's happened all the time. In 2 years time, the squad will look very different to what it does now. And it's just always part of what football is. And if Ramsey were to go, I'd be gutted, but I think I could actually see it happening. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, as you mentioned his injury problems all year, that in itself is a concern. You just start to think, well, if something like that can afflict you in that sort of way, where you're constantly getting injured, coming back, getting injured, coming back, and it's the same sort of injury, then, you know, that's not necessarily a player that you can basically, and it's sad to say, but have faith in as someone you can rely on to consistently play games of football over the course of a really long, grueling season. I mean, I really hope, as you say, Frankie, that he gets over this now. He'll have some time to recuperate properly. He'll have the full summer break to get back to full fitness, and hopefully a big pre-season behind him. And next year, if he's still at Villa Park, that you know he has a really big year next year, because we'll need him, whether we play Champions League or Europa League or whatever. But yeah, that's another element of the Ramsey saga that's certainly an issue, and might convince someone like Monchi or Emery to cash in. Okay, thank you everybody for listening. I've been your host, George Zielinski. Frankie, see you later.
Catching a bit, George, up the Villa.
Up the Villa. And it's goodbye from me too. We'll be back again soon, but until then, come on, Super Aston Villa.